Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along today as we turn our attention to craft beers. And I'm kind of really been looking forward to this program because we got a couple of guys here who know a whole lot about craft beer, and they're here to share their passion for craft beer with us and to answer any questions you might have. I hope you'll call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. With us today, Peter Gentry is the owner and brewmaster of One Barrel Brewing Company in Madison, a very successful, as far as I can tell, business. Peter, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And also Ryan.
And he's handsome as well.
Yeah.
Handsome as
well. Ryan Koga is the co-owner and brewmaster at Carbon 4 Brewery in Madison. And they are turning out some, he's turning out some pretty pretty nice beers as well. And Ryan, thank you for coming by.
Oh, no, anytime. Thank you for having us.
Well, what I should say I'm someone who enjoys craft beer, and if I would tell you that if you were to stop by our house, we have a refrigerator that's set aside for craft beers, and you might see 15 or 20 different craft beers in there at any one time, and we're very popular in our neighborhood.
I bet.
So I've enjoyed it, but in your mind, what sets craft beer apart from what we typically might think about beer? And Ryan, I'll start with you.
I think I like to start. We're asked this question a lot, and I think the conversation often degrades pretty quick into like slamming on Miller and Bud and everybody else, which I've heard called NASCAR beer before, like in that bracket. Yeah. And I do have to start by saying that I'm really proud of our entire industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. And for those folks producing beers on a very large scale, that's an incredible challenge to do. And, you know, keeping the quality and the quantity is a very difficult challenge. And we have a lot to learn from their different processes and what they've developed over the years. So I like to say that, you know, start off by saying mm-hmm. that. But, you know, moving forward, you know, I would say, you know, the big brewers, they're full of passion as well. I believe that their employees are passionate people who love, you know, what they do. And perhaps what sets us apart is that we don't have the rules and regulations, I think, that other breweries really have to play by. We're very much into discovery and creativity and seeing what how far we can push the envelope. You know, we usually choose a lot of very premium ingredients to make a premium product. You'll very often find craft beers do not follow the traditional guidelines for mm-hmm. for styles. But even when we say that, when I'm giving tours and we talk about that, I'm very quick to point out that really what craft beer, what I think it's doing, and maybe Peter has a take on this as well, is that I think craft beer is calling back to what beer's always been throughout the annals of history. Mm-hmm. I mean, beer is a statement of culture, of technology and history. People were making beer with whatever they had on hand, no matter where they were at in the world. So there's this huge bit of history and culture and everything else. Mm-hmm. And so craft beer is really just trying to call back to more traditional ways of making beer, but also then pushing that forward and trying to truly create innovative products and give the customer an awesome experience. So,
yeah. Peter, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I guess I agree. It's the variety that people are looking for. It kind of seems like with the food industry, people are looking for more variety, less of like kind of monoculturalistic food options, and then
that's a big word.
Thanks. Yeah, I barely got it out there.
Halfway through,
kind of went to, you know, wine became more craft, and now beer. Which I think people are just looking for variety and looking for high quality. And as Ryan was saying, it does harken back to the old days, pre-prohibition, when there was a brew pub or an inn in every town. And now Madison's lucky enough to have three more within the last 2 years. So we went from something like 2,000 breweries in this country in the mid-1800s to zero breweries during Prohibition to like 10 right afterwards, down to three And then just since the 80s into the 90s and 2000s, we're finally have actually surpassed the previous numbers of breweries. So people can choose and just experience a lot of different flavors and types of beers.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different kinds. You know, you guys should talk about your own businesses. I think it was really interesting how you got started. Maybe Peter, start with you. One Barrel Brewing Company, that's a cool name, and I have to say I've been there many times, and every time I've been in there, it's busy.
Yeah, we are well-received, especially I think the neighborhood near east side of Madison really likes our concept. We brew, as the name suggests, one barrel of beer at a time, which is, you know, if you go to the liquor store and buy a keg of beer, it would be two kegs of beer, two half barrels. And because of that, we can do a lot of different things. We made a beer with beets. If it's not great, you know, or you know, certain people will respond to certain things. Budweiser would probably never do that. It probably wouldn't test very well in their, you know, marketing segments. But we have a few staples, and we do a lot of experimentation, and I think people come in to see what's new. You know, during Craft Beer Week last week, we brought out a lot of sours and a lot of barrel aged beers and things like that for people to try. And it's been pretty unique experience. It's been really hard to keep up brewing one barrel at a time, I can tell you that.
Well, what about you, Ryan, with Carbon 4? How'd that name come about? And Carbon is K-A-R-B-E-N, the number four.
Yeah, probably a lot of late nights, too much McDonald's, Thai food.
Too much beer, probably.
Not enough sleep, too much beer. We're asked that question very often, and the biggest thing we wanted to do with our brewery was create a brand, you know, and Peter did an excellent job over here with one barrel. It tells you exactly what's going on, yet it opens him up to massive amounts of creativity, and it's not thematic. And we wanted to do something that was not so much thematic, but that the familiarity with Carbon 4 as a name would be correlated with our reputation over time. You know, and your customer base, they help you define who and what your company is too. And you put out products and people, you know, associate with it or, you know, understand it. So carbon is the most fundamental element of organic life. And beer is the same building block for civilization. When you look through history, beer has its fingers woven in silently, but everywhere it's there. And the more I learned that, the more that spoke to the whole group. And, you know, the number... There's four valence electrons in carbon, which is how it is, is that molecule or that element. But then as taking the phonetic spelling and putting the number just creates a new name, a new brand, a new word, really, that we get to define as we bring out beers, as we name our beers, as we develop as a company, and as we develop our customer base and we relate to our, you know, our customers and our fans and that, you know, our so the definition is... somewhat constantly evolving.
Yeah, it's really really pretty cool. And you're a chemistry major, by the way, too, weren't you?
Yeah, I had,
that help?
It definitely did. Yeah, I had chemistry and biology, and then I was in medicine too, sports medicine before this. So I had at one point in time, I had more letters after my name than I had in my name, and I don't think any of it really counts for much of anything.
Oh, man. Talking with Peter Gentry, owner of and brewmaster at One Barrel Brewing Company, and Ryan Koga, who is a co-owner and brewmaster at Carbon 4 Brewery in Madison. If you would like to join in, maybe you enjoy craft beer. Do you make your own beer? Love to hear from those who make their own beer as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you have some questions about brewing as well, and these guys certainly will have the answers or do their best to answer those for you. The Midwest, the Craft Beer Week was it about a week ago now? Is it 2 weeks ago already?
It's more like Craft Two Beer Weeks.
Yeah.
We've kind of bumped out all the events now. I think everybody's kind of starting the Friday before and ending after it. So it's become more like a 13 day.
Yeah,
I was at Tex Tubbs Taco Palace, and I know you guys were both involved with some specials at that place and probably at many other places as well.
Yeah, we did a beer with them which featured different kinds of cocoa nibs mm-hmm. and different wood aging. So at the one place we released, that was an Imperial Coffee Brown Ale, and at Tex Tubbs they had maple wood and Brazilian cocoa nibs, and we had oak and Costa Rican cocoa nibs. And actually it was strikingly different. It was kind of fun for people to go back and forth and try both kinds.
But it was a beautiful beach party.
It was, yeah.
A lot of beautiful beach towns there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's a kind of a fun place to go. Anyway, I want to give Michael and Appleton maybe a chance here before we have
Excellent.
To take our break. Michael, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Love the show, Larry. Hello, guest. I am calling from Appleton. I worked at a local brew pub here, Stone Cellar Brew Pub, for a little while a few years ago. Really enjoyed their beers, and then I'm glad to see them getting more distribution and exposure. Then actually also most recently worked for a company in the area that had the Silk Scorpion from Carbon 4 and Lady Luck, and really enjoyed those beers. I actually am friends with Nate.
Carmody.
I don't know.
Over at the Glass Nickel?
Yeah, yep. He's actually standing up at my wedding.
Awesome, yeah. I hand-delivered those kegs, actually, in the back of my car.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were the friend that he mentioned he went to high school with.
I am, yeah. Really Nate's an funny. Awesome guy. Yeah, Nate's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, no, I love him. Yeah. Anyway, my basic question, though, is I've really been interested, really like craft beers and all that, and have been interested in getting into home brewing, but I'm wondering what kind of initial investment that takes.
That is a very, very good question. And you know what? We'll take that question up. We'll let these guys think about it for a little bit first, because we're going to take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with them. Our guest today, Peter Gentry, owner and brewmaster at One Barrel Brewing Company, and Ryan Koga, who is co-owner and brewmaster at Carbon 4 Brewery in Madison. So we'll talk about what it takes to get into home brewing and certainly answer your questions as well. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions, and we'll be back right after this look at the news. Beer has been a central part of our Wisconsin cultural heritage, and now craft brewing, I think, is enjoying a huge resurgence, not only here in Wisconsin, but elsewhere as well. And we're talking today with a couple of brewmasters who've turned their passion for beer into a nice livelihood. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. My guest today, Peter Gentry of One Barrel Brewing Company in Madison, and Ryan Koga, who is the co-owner and brewmaster of Carbon 4 Brewery in Madison. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. Do you enjoy craft beer? Have questions about it? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post there. And we've got links to their places of business, too, on my Facebook page. So certainly if you want to see some more about Carbon 4, if you want to see some more about One Barrel Brewing, you can find it on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And just before the news break, we had a fellow call and ask us about what does it cost or what do you need to get in going in home brewing. And Peter, do you want to have any comments on that?
Yeah, my background was in home brewing. It kind of was a hobby that I started with my dad, something to do. So I think I'm qualified, right. And you might be as well. But the simple answer is around $100. You can go online. There are a number of places that will sell you the equipment. I recommend if you do have a local homebrew shop to go there. They have a lot more answers and information and can really help you get started. But all it really entails is a plastic bucket, some grain, and you can use the plastic bucket as a fermenter and a stovetop. So typically, homebrew shops will have kits for you that will include everything you need, and you know, you're looking at around $100, and you get about a case or two of beer out of that. So that's actually not even that bad of a deal. Once you take out the labor, though, but you know, that's where the fun of it is getting to craft your own product. And then you kind of start there, and you can add on more and more and more and more. And what I basically did is bump my homebrew system up from a 5-gallon system eventually up to a 31-gallon system, which it doesn't sound very glamorous, but kind of how we got going over at One Barrel.
And you also, I should say, feature some other brewers, home brewers, or not home brewers, but craft brewers, I would think, in your business, too. We should mention that.
Yeah, we do. We highlight, we can't brewing one barrel a beer at a time, and we actually can't quite keep up with demand, so we do highlight other local breweries, Carbon 4 being one of them.
Yeah.
So we try to keep it craft-specific, local guys doing unique stuff. We also...
There's a fist bump here.
Yeah.
We're not on TV, but you can see the fist bump.
We also go as far as to highlight homebrewers also who have won local contests. There are a few in town that if you win the contest, there's a stout contest, there's an IPA contest, there are a couple others. And then we'll take that homebrewer in if they win the contest and brew their recipe and then put that on sale at One Barrel, and it's always a contest. Everybody wants to know, you know, what's the fastest the beer is sold out and things like that. And usually we can go through two kegs in, you know, a day and a half. It's pretty impressive.
And I want to go back to the phones here and get some other people involved, but I just in those lines and thinking about craft beers and all the different kinds of craft beers you can have. Now, I personally like a real hoppy beer, so I'm one of those guys, but I was at your place one night, and I had a beer from Sweet Mullet, which was a jalapeno, a pepper beer, which I really, really enjoyed. And it's not hot in that it's going to burn your tongue, but it's got that flavor, which was really, really good.
Yeah, that's a really unique beer. And Mark over at Sweet Mullet's, which is in Oconomowoc, makes some really unique beers. He hand shells or seeds all these jalapenos. I don't want to imagine how many pounds he's dealing with there. But
I don't want to imagine the pain when he takes his contacts out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's an example of a kind of craft beer that is a little different. And I don't know that I would sit and drink it all night long, but certainly a glass or two of it was wonderful.
I would say, too, I've tried a couple different spice beers or pepper beers like that. And when I was living in Montana, we get a lot of stuff from the West Coast and some rogue stuff, and there was a few that were pretty good, and I would have to say that is hands down the best intonation of the pepper beer I've ever had.
Yeah, I really like his in particular. And you had that on your tap room as well for a little while.
We did. Yeah. We did, absolutely.
Well, Danny in Green Bay has a good question for you. Hi, Danny. Thank you for calling.
Hey, guys. Kind of tuned in late, but I just wanted to ask, we've seen the hoppy beers come around. We have now started to see the sour beers come around. Do you have a prediction for what the next big wave is of a beer style? And the second part to the question is, do you ever think we'll get back to a more traditionalist form of brewing where there'll be more pride in making a Pilsner so spot on that you can't tell it's not a, you know, Czech Pilsner in Czech Republic?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say probably the next wave I see coming is probably heavy metal beers. So arsenic and gold and silver. No, just kidding. The consumer, You, sir, who are listening to us and take the time to call, you're going to help us determine what the next wave is. I mean, our business is responding. We throw some stuff at the wall sometimes, and we try to create experiences and do things that are creative, but you help us determine that next wave. So I know for us at Carbon 4, I'm a malt-centric brewery is how we usually define ourselves, and that usually doesn't mean that I don't brew hoppy beers as well, but we always put a very, very large emphasis on balance and giving great thought to the malt profile. So I'm always looking for the longer play of a very balanced beer, even if it has complex flavors, lots of hops or spice or whatever it's going to have, it should be balanced out. And I think for me, that's going to be the long play for our company and for our business model. The second question, I'll give my two cents and let Peter come in it because I want to hear what he has to say as well on this. I think absolutely your second part is spot on with the pride and the focus on quality. Will it go back to strictly just traditional stuff? No, but what you were talking about with Pilsners, brewing lager beers is one of the greatest challenges you can ever have because there's nowhere to hide your mistakes. So I think the more the consumer becomes educated on craft beer or beer in general and good beer and being able to determine good beer from great beer, then we're always pushed to brew better beer. and, you know, we'll play around with more lagers. And I think actually you're seeing a little bit on the West Coast and some other places too, people playing with Pilsners now and messing with the style where it's a hoppy,
absolutely.
This, that, or the other thing. So I'll let Peter go.
Yeah, I think it all kind of ties together, actually. I do think it's a sessionable beer is what people are starting to look for. You see it on the West Coast now. You see session IPAs. You see all these things, and that will lead you back to a well-balanced Pilsner or beer like that.
I think you hit it. I think session beer is probably that next little wave, people. I mean, we did a session Bock.
Yeah.
You know, for our collaboration brew this year. We thought, okay, doubles, triples, quads, all this other big beers. Let's go to session something.
Yeah, I think people, going along with the fact that they want all the variety, they can only have one 9% IPA, where if you can have a 3, 4, or 5%, you know, session, what have you.
And so somebody's going to say, well, now, wait a minute, what is a session beer?
It's just a lighter alcohol beer. You can sit down and have a good long drinking session.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where, that's where the name comes.
More than one beer, you know.
Some people see session in our, we make Undercover Session Ale as one of our flagships. And they, when they look at it, they say, can I have the Saison? And I'm like, hang on a second. So Saison, a farmhouse, session ale, you know, in the end. But session, I think it's more of an English-derived term where they talked about being able to drink an entire session. They call it a session, drinking session without getting too into the bag.
Mm-hmm. I talked to another brewmaster who's been very successful, who told me that he thought the hardest one beers to brew well were the lagers because... I mean, to
Without a doubt, a
pure lager, he said, is really difficult to do.
And to make it the same every time is hugely challenging.
Yeah, exactly. You know, here's something interesting from Richard in Manitowoc. He says, what is beer if you can make it out of beets? I've had beer from the East Coast of the U.S. to the West Coast and from Norway to Bavaria. German beers are beautiful, but I guess I don't know what beer is. Can you define what is beer? If you can make it out of beets.
Well, this was an adjunct to that. There's a style that includes vegetable or spiced beers. So our beer was truly a beer with malted barley. I think that probably is the simplest thing. But we added beet flavor to it by running heated beer through uncooked beets.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, to just get purely Webster's Dictionary here. The Reinheitsgebot, of course, of 1516, of course.
Of course.
Oh, yes, of course. Straighten out my bow tie real quick.
The Reinheitsgebot would dictate that beer can only be made out of water, yeast, barley, and hops. Mm-hmm. And but there's also other prairie grains that we use, like rye and wheat and oats. And that's basically like your... like the base palate, and what craft beer really is doing is seeing how we can use those in different proportions and different versions of those different malts and hops, and then add in something that makes it fun, like cocoa nibs or beets or something else. And that's really to try to give it the X factor and see how far, you know, explore the studio space, if you will.
Mm. Eric in Monona, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. This is Eric in Monona. Peter, hi. How you doing? I just wanted to call in, and this is a great, great topic, and I just wanted to reiterate what you said about how easy it is to start your own home brewing. I mean, I used to home brew years ago, and it really is. It's only about $100 investment, and then the time and the passion to really put into it. And Peter, I remember when you were brewing beer out of your garage.
Yeah, Eric was my neighbor for 8 years.
Yeah. And you would have me over, and I'd try your beer, and it was just fantastic. And so I just want to put a little plug in for your place for One Barrel. I mean, your expertise is really above reproach, and so I just wanted to call in since I heard this conversation.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you,
You'll
Eric.
Receive your $20 check leaving
in
the office
tomorrow. Well, let's turn – thanks, Eric. Let's turn to Scott and Eau Claire. Scott, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. You guys are making me thirsty here.
Yeah.
But, I was just calling. I actually was in the beer industry for a beer distributor for almost 12 years, and I bartended for the last going on 13 years now. And it was kind of neat to see the evolution of the craft beer, you know, more and more people kind of picking up on it. And, you see it, you know, becoming more mainstream, which unfortunately sometimes is a bad thing, but with, you know, the quality of the beers when they get bigger. But I was wondering, I unfortunately have not sampled either of your guys's, but I am becoming a huge fan of some of the honey lagers and the honey beers. Wondering if you guys have experimented with that, and then also the boom of the cider beers. Yeah. Well, it's technically not a beer because it's not malt; it's a malt beverage. But is that something that can be done at a homebrew also? I haven't looked into it, and it's not been around much where there's, I don't know if anybody's experimented with that, but I've done some home brews myself with some, you know, dark beers, you know, with the coffees and the chocolates and stuff like that, but wondering if you guys have dabbled with that and with any of the honey beers or the cider beers.
All right, thanks for calling. Peter, it was turn to you first.
Yeah, we've done a lot with honey. Actually, it's kind of the first honey beer we made at One Barrel was off of the White House's website. The chef at the White House took honey from their hives in the White House garden or whatever and produced two beers using that, and we recreated one. And it was fairly, very popular. We haven't brought it back yet. We might wait till the next election cycle, you know. But so it's easy to use honey as an adjunct in beer. Also, in my homebrew days, I made a hard cider. It's not within my license currently. You need a wine license to make full-on apple cider or hard apple cider. Mm-hmm. You can, I think if you have some percentage of beer and you mix cider in, you can do, but that's aside the point. You can find a lot of good recipes for making hard apple cider. My favorite actually used about a third of wildflower honey. So I just got apple cider from the local farmer's market. 5 gallons is not cheap, but does make a delicious delicious product, and added some honey to it to kind of boost the alcohol content, and actually served that at my best friend's wedding and my sister's wedding in lieu of champagne. So these recipes are out there, you know, at the White House's website. You can actually find a honey porter and a honey ale, which is kind of a lighter, sweeter beer. And then, you know, again, homebrew shops are a great resource for books with all types of cider making information.
Yeah, very cool. We have Kevin in Deerfield next. Kevin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I was just wondering what would you say is the interest among craft brewers in Wisconsin in procuring locally grown ingredients? I know there's, you know, a network of hop growers, small scale hop growers, developing in the state. I haven't heard a lot about barley producers serving the craft brew market in the state, but just wondering what do you see as the potential in that area and how much interest is there?
I think there's a natural interest for craft brewers, you know, us being small local business owners, to support fellow local business owners and local products. I do think that it really depends upon your business model and your scale for the brewers. So to kind of help the audience understand, I think Montana just became the number one malt producing state, barley producing state. Because usually barley is grown in a mountainous area where it's hot during the day and very cool at night. So you see, you know, Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, Idaho, that type of stuff. Is usually where barley is grown, although Wisconsin used to be a huge giant in barley growing back in the day, I will say there,
yeah.
Back in the day. But, you know, the barley also has to be malted, so you have to find a malting facility, and, you know, of course, there's Barista's, a local one, too. And I know that there was organic local stuff, and I know there's the local hops as well. The challenge that I face at a brewery of my size is that, number one, I have to have the supply in large enough sizes so that I can guarantee the whole year. It's hard for me to mix one style of Cascade hops grown in Washington, the state of Washington out there, you know, like at Yakima Valley, and then mix it with other hops of the same species, but they're grown in Wisconsin. They're going to be totally different. And I'm trying to produce a lot more beer, so that becomes more of a challenge for me. And because we're also producing beer in volume, the local hop places are producing excellent products, but naturally, since they're smaller co-ops, the price is sometimes double or triple what I'm already contracted for through Washington or Yakima Valley grown hops. And Yakima Valley basically supplies almost, I would say, you know, the lion's share of the entire United States brewing things. So for me to do some of those local things, it's more difficult unless, you know, so because we'd have to charge so much because we make it in such a large volume, and so that becomes the challenge for us. If it's a smaller brew hub, a smaller place, I think that's it's probably a little bit easier to do because of the margin that a brew pub can make because you're selling all of your beer by the keg out of your own tap room by the glass. Mm-hmm. And for us, we sell wholesale to a distributor for the most part. So yeah, it's a big challenge for us. Do I want to buy more local? Of course. And we'll see, just like, it's like market forces for us. But, you know, Peter probably has another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frankly, for us, the price is somewhat of an issue, but we are able to use a lot more. We have a few producer friends, Wisconsin Hop Exchange, Gorse Valley, and then actually a gentleman came in. He says he's a little bit more than a hobby farmer. He brings us quite a bit of hops. Mm-hmm. So we probably use about half of our hops are grown in Wisconsin. And as we are able to do that as a smaller beer producer, the price will come down and will allow the bigger brewers like Carbon 4 to start brewing with local hops, and specifically grain is a little harder because it does have to grow out, mm-hmm, out west a little bit more.
And American or Canadian grown barley is much different from some of the UK or German or European grown stuff as well. A thing that I focus on being a malt-centric brewery is I try to grab the premium stuff that I can get. And that's not to shirk anybody who's doing anything locally right now at all. A lot of what I'm focusing on in the larger scale is that my promise is that I want to make sure that my customer, every keg that leaves and goes to our taproom footprint, you know, like our distribution footprint, I want to make sure that you're getting the very best I can possibly get my hands on. You know, I want you to get the best beer in the glass possible, mm-hmm, you know. So if that means I have to use a UK barley for a while on something, I'm going to do that because I think that that's the honest statement for us, you know. We're all passionate about what we're doing, and those passions have to follow their ends.
And, you know, but there are some good local, I mean, Gorse Valley Hops, you mentioned Gorse Valley. They're
doing an awesome job.
They're doing a really good job with a lot of small producers, but they're kind of ensuring through their education of those growers that they're getting a very good product and a consistent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think over time that price is naturally going to fall down to a place where like myself or Ale Asylum and Wisconsin Brew, we can buy in larger volumes because sometimes they come out with the crop and they might only have 400 pounds of a certain hop available.
Yeah.
And we might be contracted for 3,000 pounds that year, you know, or 10,000 pounds of it. So, I don't know. Everybody has their own business challenges, you know, and,
does anybody sell, here's another question. Tim wonders, does anybody, sell a craft brewed non-alcoholic beer?
Not that I know of.
I haven't seen them. I've been asked a couple times, and I can't, the technology of, I think there's like an alcohol extractor. I don't even know how they, to be perfectly blunt, honest, I don't know
how
they do the alcohol out.
How they do it.
I'm only good at making alcohol stuff. I like to get you lit, you know.
How long does craft beer last in the fridge, Dale wants to know from Milwaukee. Is it the same as regular beer?
Some craft places pasteurize their beer as well. When we get to bottling, we're not going to pasteurize, and it all depends upon the technology, the quality of your bottling system, how the three main enemies of beer are heat, light, and oxygen. So depending upon your packaging and your packaging line for bottled stuff, if you can get very low oxygen levels and the beer is always kept cold, I mean, things can stay fresh probably up to 4 months, but yeah, other beers are made for aging. If you're talking growlers, you know,
at a brew pub or something that they're filling from the tap, that's, mm-hmm, 7 days or something like that. But in a bottle, craft beer is on par with all the big pasteurized boys.
I would, as a caveat, say especially when kept under at least under 50 degrees.
Yeah,
you don't know, leave it in your garage.
Yeah, don't leave it in your garage. Don't let it get, especially above 70, and everything else is just going to start destroying it. That's when it's going to get bad.
Well, guys, you're both producing some great beers, and I want to thank you both very much for being with us today, and I hope we have a chance to do it again. Appreciate it.
I hope so, too. Larry, do you mind if I put out a mission statement there real quick? I want people to remember to be alive every day and to take time for themselves, remember that they are, in fact, alive, and that's what beer really is. It's social lubrication. It's an excuse to gather with folks that you care about and make the memories that really count.
There we go. Ryan Koga, co-owner and brewmaster of Carbon 4 Brewery in Madison, and Peter Gentry, owner and brewmaster at One Barrel Brewing Company. Go online to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and you can learn some more about them. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.